Hello, hello. Welcome to the show, the show. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel Noel. Noel, what are we doing here? What is this?
I just thought it was a cool cadence for Ridiculous History.
Oh, I see what you did there. You said the name of the show so people know what they're listening to.
Yes, yes, for everyone who is in such a rush to hear the latest episode that they haven't bothered to read the title and aren't sure what show they're listening to, you are in the right place.
And write in. Let us know. Should we do an entire show, a rhyming show, where we're just like the whole thing rhymes? I don't know if we have the bandwidth to pull that off, Ben.
I bet we could pull it off, though, Noel. We would just have to take it slow at first and eventually accept that some rhymes will be better and some will be worse.
You know what? That's a good way to approach life.
It is true indeed. It is true indeed. This is, of course, the show where we look at all the strange, fascinating, at times silly, and often ridiculous stories of yesteryear. And this one that you found was completely new information to me. I had no idea. And Noel and I have talked about – oh, and also shout out to our super producer, Casey Pegram. Hey, Casey. We got a thumbs up. He's in a good mood today. Noel and I have talked often about these strange cockamamie assassination attempts that sound like there's something out of Naked Gun.
You mean just like in our spare time?
Yeah, it comes up.
What is spare time?
Right?
No, I love the Naked Gun movies. What I always think about is all of the kind of James Bond-esque devices that were already so ridiculous. They barely needed to be satirized, but the Naked Gun always managed to kind of take it to another level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the truth of the matter is that in decades past, with the emergence of modern intelligence agencies or their precursors from, let's say, call it after World War I through World War II and on to the present day, we saw this rise in very, what should we call them, out-of-the-box plans to assassinate world leaders. Probably one of the most famous examples for this for most people, it would be the CIA's plans and their various attempts to either humiliate, undermine, or assassinate Fidel Castro. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of the weird things they tried there?
I mean, the one you think of is like practically a prank that you would play on, you know, an unsuspecting friend who smokes lots of cigars. The old exploding cigar trick. You think about it from like Looney Tunes and stuff. And I always thought of it as, you know, like a little ha-ha. But no, if there was like thermite in that thing, it'd take your head off.
Right. And what we found was that Fidel Castro and the CIA are not unique entirely. And what you introduced me to is today's topic, a very strange story about former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
And it's cool because there's actually a biopic coming out about Churchill with the absurdly talented Gary Oldman portraying Mr. Churchill. So Churchill was one of the first European leaders that was vehemently opposed to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. I mean, it sounds like kind of like a no-brainer, but it was there, you know, there was sort of a, I don't know, not a don't ask, don't tell policy, but kind of like a let's see what happens kind of policy.
Right,
and
right,
Churchill,
right.
You know, really took up the mantle of this is a humanitarian crisis. This is an issue of good versus evil and sort of framed the UK as being on the good side. His broadcasts really boosted the nation, the whole mindset of the nation, and who were pretty freaked out by what Hitler would be capable of. And as a result, Hitler and his, you know, goon squad,
there we go,
really, really wanted to put an end to this man. But how do you do a thing like that? I mean, Churchill was incredibly insulated. You know, he, as you know, any leader of a nation is constantly under surveillance, kept under lock and key, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to reach a guy like that?
Right. One of the most protected non-royal family members in the kingdom.
He was actually like working, you know, you'd think they would protect him more. They just kind of prop up the queen and, you know, and kind of trundle her out during, you know, events.
Smile and wave. Oh, boy. So in 2012, we finally learned what they were planning, and oh, buddy, is it weird.
Yeah, this is not a thing that was like super common knowledge until a letter, or a few letters, a parcel of letters, shall we say, was unearthed bearing a secret stamp. It's a little on the nose, isn't it? You just like, don't look at this. It's secret.
Shh.
Hey, okay, I'm going to open that right on up. The letter was commissioned by a Lord Victor Rothschild, who was an MI5 senior intelligence chief. Now, Ben, is this the Rothschild of the Rothschild Rothschilds? That was a mouthful.
Yeah, related too, for sure.
Big, powerful family, mm-hmm. from the UK, far-reaching political control and even to this day influence over the banking system of the UK and politics, correct? Mm-hmm.
Financial clout for sure. Lord Victor Rothschild during peacetime was a scientist and a key member of the Rothschild banking dynasty when he wrote this letter to a talented illustrator that he was aware of named Lawrence Fish.
Such a good British name.
Mm-hmm. And on May 4th, 1943, Lord Victor Rothschild wrote to Mr. Fish and asked him to draw poster-sized images of a particular type of chocolate for the purposes of warning the public to be on the lookout.
A nice chalky. You ever seen that episode of Monty Python where they have there's a candy company that has an assortment and they're all really unpleasant. Like one of them, it's called like the nougat surprise. And then you bite into it, it shoots out bolts through either cheek, piercing them from the inside. And there's one that's the crunchy frog that has an actual tiny amphibian inside of it. And the crunch comes from the crunch of its bones. This particular device would be quite at home in that assortment. Because one of the devices that was sketched out by Mr. Fish was a chocolate bar containing a layer within that, when snapped, would explode.
That's right. You see, Lord Victor Rothschild had received word of a possible Nazi plot to kill Winston Churchill by smuggling this chocolate into the War Cabinet's dining room. And this war cabinet here is a group of people. It's not a specific cabinet. I'm picturing Winston Churchill getting up at 3 a.m. in his skivvies and then walking to the war cabinet to get chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he had some fine, fine silk pajamas.
Oh, that's
certain of it.
You're probably right, Noel. You're probably right. The treat in question, this chocolate bar, was finally wrapped in black and gold paper and labeled Peter's Chocolate. And here's the thing. It wouldn't have aroused suspicion, at least the Nazis hoped, because it wasn't a fake chocolate bar. It was actually chocolate. And they put a lot of thought into this.
Right. According to a British spy who actually firsthand got a look at this exploding delicacy, he was able to draw the first artist's rendering of it. And what it was a steel plate, a very thin steel plate, covered by a thin layer of dark chocolate. And as I said before, when the chocolate bar was broken along those nice square lines where you can get you a little piece,
snap.
You want to snap it because it's tempered chocolate. We'll get into that in a second. Mm-hmm. That would detonate the device. And only then, that is when there was a canvas strap that connected to the explosive inside, and only once you broke it could you actually see it. Mm. It had a 7-second delay following that very satisfying snap, and apparently was a powerful enough explosive that the effects could be felt for several meters in all directions.
Right, and this was a high-powered explosive.
Yeah, and in all the research about this, I couldn't find specific mention of the type of explosive used. But in this cache of drawings uncovered from Mr. Fish, there were multiple drawings.
Yes, 25.
Of various devices, exactly. One of which looked sort of a military-issue crock pot, I guess, where there was a false bottom and it had peas and bangers and mash kind of dish on the inside. And it looks like it used thermite, which, Ben, you can probably speak to this. Is a pretty powerful substance that can burn through steel, and when ignited properly and used in a certain way, can cause some serious carnage.
Yeah, thermite is a composition of metal powder that could be a fuel, a metal oxide. The thing with thermite is when you ignite it with heat, it undergoes a pretty intense exothermic reduction, oxidation, or redox, if you want to be cool with the the explosive crew, a redox reaction. And most varieties of this stuff are not explosive. They just create brief bursts of heat and high temperature in a small area. But you can make it explosive, and that's what you'll see. That's how you can make like thermite hand grenades and stuff like that. So it can be weaponized.
And I guess because we're dealing with such a thin and small item, like I said, even though I didn't see specific mention of thermite in the chocolate bar drawing, it was in some of the other drawings in this cache of illustration. So let us know if you've heard anything beyond this speculation. But the point is, this could really do some serious damage, especially if you're holding it close to your face. It would, you know, cause a blast that would, you know, could of course kill you.
Right. And this chocolate bar, in our opinion, was one of the strangest devices, but it was, as we had said, one of several. There's the military mess tin, and there are a couple of different diagrams, I believe, of the chocolate, which you can view online. There's a historian named Nigel West who, in speaking with the BBC, said that he believes Rothschild probably paid out of pocket for these diagrams. Just for context with Lord Victor Rothschild, it's not like he was hard up for the scratch or the cheddar.
But he was a good citizen. Mm-hmm. He was a very, what's the word, patriotic individual and wanted to use his wealth for the greater good. And he was, I guess, sort of more of a consultant, I guess, or like a board member of some kind.
Yeah, he just for
didn't draw a salary.
Right. Just for perspective, when MI5 was scouting out some offices to locate in Paris, he said, "You guys, just use one of my mansions."
I got a few.
Yeah,
kicking around.
Totally use the Paris mansion.
Exactly.
And so once Fish completed the illustrations and sent them to Rothschild, he liked them so much that he had one framed in his home library. Again, this is top secret stuff. And then he put the remaining prints in storage. So when these letters were found, when this parcel of letters was found in 2012, historians around the world wondered, well, what happened to the illustrations? Because at first, they only found the letters.
But then super recently, in early September of 2015, some of the members of the Rothschild family were sorting through some documents, and they found the drawings. And experts consider them pretty incredible for pre-digital graphics. These are like hand-drawn kind of cross-sections of diagrams of all these different devices. And actually here in the How Stuff Works offices in Atlanta, Georgia, Pond City Market, we have a bunch of framed illustrations that are right along these lines. We've got one that shows a gas mask in cross-section and all the different layers of that. We have one that shows, I believe, like a Nerf gun or something like that.
Super Soaker.
Super Soaker, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But very similar in style and not an easy feat to do accurately by hand, especially, you know, in those days.
And we're huge fans of cutaway diagrams. If you have any really cool ones, please send them to us because we'll just look at them for fun. We literally want to know how stuff works.
That's true. And so the chocolate bar drawing in particular was seriously compelling because it really could actually work because, you know, people like a nice tasty chocolate treat, and the bar was designed to detonate using minimal effort from the individual consuming said treat, right? So, right. Like, all you got to do is do that thing you're going to do anyway. Give it a snap. You don't have to do anything special.
It won't feel unusually difficult.
Doesn't have to be any particular line, right?
Right.
Because the whole thing runs throughout the whole bar, so it could be like, you know, breaking in half or just breaking off a little piece.
Yeah. And so this kind of strategy, spycraft, espionage, was very common on the German side. They were super into it. Oh, and I forgot to mention, Lawrence Fish the reason he got hit up for this, he was the son of one of the three MI5 counter-sabotage agents at the time. So there was a family relation there too. He wasn't – I don't think Rothschild was just, you know, flipping through a magazine and said, ah, now this is the guy. Mm. Let me just ask him this weird question. There's another weird detail I'll add about Churchill at the end. But as Noel said, we found these documents quite recently when the Rothschild family were sorting through stuff on the estate in September 2015. And you have to wonder how strange and fascinating that Cave of Wonders must be.
Yeah, look at this trove, treasures untold.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Gadgets and gizmos as aplenty. And, you know, I'll tell you, it's significant, too, that the Germans did not use milk chocolate. They didn't use white chocolate. They used dark chocolate. And that is because of the way chocolate in a chocolate bar, and dark chocolate in particular, has to be tempered. So what's the deal with tempering, Ben?
Right. Okay, tempering chocolate is essentially melting it and then stirring it vigorously as it cools. Pastry chefs know all about this.
I learned about it pretty recently because my daughter is a big fan of this new pastry cooking show on Netflix called Zumbo's Just Desserts and also the Great British Bake Off, where tempering chocolate is hugely important when they're making decorations or things that have to stand up to pressure, mm-hmm. or like, you know, chocolate shapes that they then put on cakes or decorate the sides with it, because otherwise it will not hold its shape and it will melt all over the place. The same is true for a chocolate bar. In order to be able to hold it and have it be, you know, manipulatable and break on those lines of demarcation, the chocolate has to be tempered correctly.
Right. And one of the questions would be, why temper chocolate? So I propose that we take a page from our good friends Lauren and Annie over at our sister show, Food Stuff. And we'll talk just briefly about the food science here. The short answer for why you would want to temper chocolate is that chemically, it's composed of several different tiny crystals, six to be exact. Of these six, there's one desirable type, and they're called beta crystals. Developing and forming these crystals is what makes – that's the key to the good chocolate. So the one in comparison would be like a cup of chicken stock. It might seem homogeneous, uniform mm-hmm. throughout, but the fat's going to rise to the surface.
Sure.
And when chocolate is an emulsion, but if you warm and melt it, you break the emulsion. As it cools, cocoa butter rises to the surface, unattractive but harmless. And sometimes that even makes people throw away the chocolate. We can briefly laundry list the reasons you would temper chocolate. Avoid fat and sugar bloom, you know, those white streaks or blotches on the surface. You raise the melting temperature of the finished chocolate so it doesn't melt on contact with your fingers, which would be super awkward if someone's like, hey, why is there canvas at this bar? It preserves, you know, the keeping quality, cools it quickly, and it gives it that classy, glossy, shiny.
Makes it pretty. Yeah, especially if you're using it like a pastry chef would use it.
And the final, most important thing, not just for pastry chefs, but for would-be Nazi assassins, again, would-be Nazi assassins, is that tempering chocolate gives it that capacity for that crisp, clean snap. I had to pop the P for emphasis there.
Yeah, it was a good, you're a good pee popper. Good thing we got these nice popper stoppers mm-hmm. on our mics here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know. I hope I didn't set it up too much at the top of the show to sound like this was a successful attempt, because everyone's like, I don't remember hearing about any exploding chocolate bars and attempts on Winston Churchill's life. Yeah, because it didn't really happen. These were beta tests at the very best, right? Mm-hmm. These drawings. But my question to you, Ben, is, these drawings were commissioned by the British government based on technology the Nazis may have had. What's the connection there?
Reported by a British spy
who
was embedded on the German side. And because of this, this is part of the story that they don't emphasize too much. It's just a funny little detail. So the British spy was actually the first one to draw the diagram. Let's say I don't want to cast too much aspersion on the guy, but let's say he was stressed and maybe a little distracted with
sure.
his other stuff, because apparently the first drawing he made was just
garbage,
terrible.
Yeah,
it was like a dumpster fire of candy bar drawings.
But then Fish mm-hmm. was past those documents and was able to get a little more granular and detailed with it.
So I just have this picture in my head of Lord Rothschild reading the messages from the spy and going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, quite, quite, and then going, Oh, no. It's a very poor sketch. Why, this won't do one bit. And then, you know, who has the boy who draws? Someone send a memo to the boy.
The boy.
I hope he addressed it. Dear the boy.
Yes, of course. That's how they referred to their underlings.
I hope we've done a pretty good job establishing the worry that they were tackling at this time, or that they were addressing, because as – well, I hate to overuse the word, Noel, but as ridiculous as it sounds today in 2017, this was a very real concern. This was quite possibly a way to kill the prime minister.
Absolutely. And in looking through these drawings, the thing that occurred to me was, you know, think about what happens when we go through airport security now. We got to take out our laptops. There's all kinds of, like, we can't have, you know, hair gel or certain types of liquid, because the technology now and the everyday objects that it could be embedded in are much more complex. These drawings and these devices are very, very analog and very just practical and functional, and it required, you know, a physical touch to actually detonate, you know, as opposed to being done by remote or being integrated into the circuitry of a phone or a computer or something like that. So this was cutting edge for the time, right?
Sure. Yeah. This stuff, I really appreciate you saying that, because this stuff is all mechanical. There's no sort of electronic wizardry or sorcery going on here. We also want to tell you about just a couple of the other items. Noel, I think you mentioned that army mess kit that does look like a crock pot.
Mm-hmm.
They also had a motor oil can with explosives inside. You know, maybe not. Maybe that's a little too on the nose, since motor oil is already a dangerous thing around fire. One of the ideas, going back to the historian Nigel West, that Germany was focusing on was destroying ships that would reach the United Kingdom so they could deprive Britain of foodstuffs. And this would be, you know, this is almost like a siege mentality at that point. And we say this because, sure, killing the prime minister of an enemy country would be
a setback.
Yeah, yeah, to say the least. It's a tremendous coup, right? But if you really want to shut down the entire country, then do something that affects everybody. So they were really focusing on trying to sink or destroy the ships while they were out at sea.
And according to an article on the BBC that we found from Nick Higgum, the chocolate bar might have been the most bizarre explosive device that they found in these drawings, but the one that was probably potentially the most effective involved a timer, very intricate timer, that would go off after 21 days and involved a rotating disc. And at the top, it says in bold letters, "Do not unscrew here." And at the very bottom, equally bold, according to this article, "Unscrew here first." So, you know, very important to get those timers right to assure that the ship went down well out of range of any kind of help.
Yeah. And devious, right? Ingenious, too.
Big time.
And, you know, if we're being objective about it, that's some really impressive engineering.
Oh, yeah.
We do have, I think, a cool place to close here that I think you'll enjoy. And one of these things might be a surprise for you, Noel. You'll be happy to know, friends and neighbors, that Lawrence Fish went on to become quite a successful designer, graphic artist, right? And he had a long and rewarding career. What I probably should have mentioned at the top, and this is going to be the last fact for me regarding this story, is that Winston Churchill himself believed he had another layer of protection in addition to the state security forces, in addition to the power of the United Kingdom's military. You see, Winston Churchill believed that he heard voices and he would obey what those voices told him to do, and he was convinced on several occasions that it had saved his life. And it's a very strange kind of Halloween-y anecdote to add there. He would hear the voices telling him, in this sort of a bicameral mind thing almost, "Sit here, do this, scoot over here," and followed it without question all his days.
I would call that intuition, but that's just me.
He was very specific that it was a golden voice that he would hear.
Interesting.
I wonder if it told him to keep drinking.
Probably did. And I wonder if it plays into Gary Oldman's depiction of him in this upcoming film, Churchill, which we will have to go see.
Yes, we can only hope. We are off today to fanboy a little bit about the flawed but amazing historical figure known as Winston Churchill, who famously and perhaps unknowingly to himself avoided death by chocolate. Ooh, I was holding on to that reference for a while.
That's good. I think there's like a that's like a fancy like TGI Fridays style, you know, molten lava chocolate cake. I think that's
is that really
no death by chocolate? Absolutely, that exists as a thing. Yeah. What's your favorite delicious treat, explosive or otherwise? Write us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com and let us know. You can also find us on Facebook, on Instagram. Still working on that vision board for Pinterest. It'll come one day, but not today, my friends. And we hope you join us on another day for another installment of Ridiculous History.